You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism. Broadcasting live from Florida's Sun Coast on WTMY Sunday Travel Radio. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's our host, the travel guy, Roy Lowy.
This is Roy Lowy, and you're listening to Talking Travel on WTMY 1280 in sunny Sarasota and on TTRN.com. My guest today is Mr. Bob Fisher from Philosophical Traveler. Thank you for joining Talking Travel, Bob.
Well, it's great to be back, sir.
Now, you have your own website. Tell us about it.
Well, it's called The Philosophical Traveler because, as you and I both know, all travel is a philosophical venture. And if you want to go there, the address is www.philosophicaltraveler.ca. C-A as in Canada, A.
And
Traveler has two L's because that's how we spell it up here in the frozen north.
And today we're going to chat about a recent trip you did to Martinique, which sounds really exciting.
Yeah, the article, which is up there on my site, is called A Walk Through the Creole Gardens of Martinique. And it's really all about how landscape and history shapes culture, especially, I might add, in Martinique. Now, I'm wondering, can I give you a little bit of background on Martinique? Because most people don't realize that Martinique is actually French territory.
And very French at that.
Absolutely. You know, and I'll do this very quickly, but France itself is divided into 26 regions, like the Île-de-France, where Paris is. But France is also divided into 100 départements, or departments, and they are more or less the equivalent of provinces or states. Four of those départements are overseas. They're not colonies, they're not territories, and from an administrative point of view, they are every much a part of France as Paris or the Dordogne. But the four overseas départements are Martinique, Guadeloupe, French Guiana in the northeast part of South America, and the island of La Réunion in the Indian Ocean. But France, like the United States, is a highly diverse, geographically, culturally destination. You know, if you go to the north, south, east, west, or overseas, it's as diverse as the United States. I mean, if you think of the United States, the deep south, California, Puerto Rico, Guam. But there's one unifying factor in France, whether it's overseas France or whether it's mainland France. French culture, French history, French language, they're a member of the European Union, and in Martinique, they use the euro. But it is a destination that is incredibly diverse in terms of its biodiversity, but also its cultural diversity. And that's why I say, especially in Martinique, landscape shapes culture.
But you say that in your article, that landscape shapes culture and history shapes culture. Now, expand on that a little, if you will.
Well, as you know, the Caribbean or the West Indies better than I do, but why did the European powers go there? Well, they were colonial powers. They were into empire building. They were in search of natural resources. Well, what's the Caribbean have? Well, the Caribbean is a great place to grow a lot of crops, especially sugar cane. And sugar cane was one of the prime resources and one of the prime money-making crops that was grown and shipped, of course, back to Europe. The other industry, and unfortunately I have to use that term, but it's really an institution, was that of slavery. And many of the major European powers, as you know, were involved in the institution of slavery. And this is also Martinique. And this is where the Creole experience in Martinique comes in. And if I can, I'd just like to comment a bit on Creole, because most people have sort of a vague understanding of that word. If you say Creole, they tend to think of New Orleans, which is correct,
right,
because New Orleans was a former colony of France before the Louisiana Purchase. But the term Creole is far more diverse than that. The original and the root meaning basically means a person of mixed race, black, white, a black person who was born in the New World as opposed to someone who was brought there from Africa. And the people of Martinique have an incredibly rich Creole experience, history, and tradition. But it also is a cultural and language issue as well. Creole can refer to a person of mixed black and European, primarily French or Spanish, and the word comes, of course, from the French creole or the Spanish criollo, which you better help me pronounce that one.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that was very good. And interesting that when I was in West Africa recently, obviously that is the major language, but they also spoke the local languages. If it were a Portuguese colony, the other, which is very much where you're going with this, I guess.
Yes, because the word Creole really means a person native to a particular locality.
Right.
And in travel and tourism, as you know, that we are becoming far more sensitized to the local regions and what's actually there. And Martinique is probably a great example of this, because travelers today are really demanding far more bang for their buck and far more meaning in terms of the destination they go to. Well, Martinique is, first of all, it's an incredibly beautiful destination, and geographically, topographically. But it is also a destination where you can explore to your heart's content.
Well, you refer to it as a destination within a destination.
Well, there I'm talking about the Creole Gardens, which is the subject of the particular article, which is up on my site. Martinique is, as I'm sure you're aware, a volcanic island. As a matter of fact, its major volcano, Mont Pelee, in 1906, I believe, erupted and just wiped out the capital city of the time, Saint-Pierre, and took over 300,000 lives at the time. But like all volcanic regions, they are very fertile soil. And people keep going back to these areas, A, because the land is cheap, but also because it's excellent in terms of agriculture. The Creole Gardens are in the highlands, in the interior of Martinique. And they're called the Creole Gardens because a lot of mixed-race people in Martinique who work in other sections or other sectors of the economy in Martinique also work in agriculture in the highlands, where they have these small plots of land which today are superb examples of sustainable agriculture. And they are growing everything from bananas, which is one of their big crops, to sugar cane and corn and manioc and all sorts of other things. But the Creole Gardens represent really self-determination. They represent the coming of age of people who once upon a time came from slave backgrounds, and they are now very much the mainstream on this island, an island that is mountainous, and it's the island or an island that proves my theme of the interconnectedness and the interdependence of all things. And by that I mean land, history, and culture.
So in a sense, you're saying that you have, in addition to the regular tourism, you have the agritourism and, of course, sustainable tourism. Now, from the sustainability aspect, are they looking after that? We're talking about sort of gentleman farming here. You have people that are living in the city that have other jobs, and yet they're farming in the mountainous areas or in the farming areas.
Well, the Creole gardens were when France abolished slavery, and don't ask me what year that was in because I can't remember. But when they abolished slavery, the Creole people, the people of African descent, were given plots of land. Now, of course, they were given plots of land in the most difficult places to access, which is the interior of the highlands. But, as it also turned out, it turns out to be some of the best agricultural land, the best soil. And so they have developed a culture, an agricultural culture, in Martinique that is now extremely successful in terms of their national economy. 14% of the active population of Martinique work in the agricultural industry. Now, that's compared to 4% in what people from Martinique call la métropolitaine, or metropolitan France.
Right.
So, and people often don't realize that there are many islands in the West Indies, Caribbean, and I won't differentiate between the two, that are highly successful in terms of microtourism, microagritourism, but especially agricultural, because it's a highly biodiversified terrain.
So, in your opinion, the big question always, where it gets confusing at times, is the ecotourism versus agritourism versus sustainable tourism. And sustainable, of course, is the big effort these days, is to protect what you have. And in your opinion, would you say they're doing this in Martinique?
Absolutely. And here I think you have to realize that Martinique is a highly developed island, a highly developed infrastructure, extremely educated people, educated from all points of view. And that's also why the travel and tourism industry is so fascinating, because there's so much to do there. They have wonderful beaches, and I got to see some of them. But they have so much else that people are interested in doing these days. People who want a really in-depth, grassroots, and meaningful travel experience. Walking, for example. I was there with two colleagues from Quebec who are part of an organization called the Quebec Association of Hiking. And they were doing a number of these walks, and I got to do two of them with them. And you're walking through areas that are a botanist's dream. Someone who is interested in horticulture, someone who is interested in the science of land management. This is what Martinique is, and this is what it is so well known for these days.
Now, how did you feel about the attitude towards tourism? Was it, or tourists per se, did you find the people friendly, open to tourists, or because the French take a terrible beating about being anti-tourists, or so we've always had on the mainland of France, of course.
Well, you know, and that, unfortunately, I don't know where that reputation came from. I think it came from one waiter in Paris that someone had a bad time with. But have you ever met any waiters in New York City that didn't exactly treat you well?
Oh, without a doubt.
But, you know, as you well know, I travel a lot in France. I speak French, and the French people, whether they're on, you know, the Metropolitan, mainland France, or in Martinique, are extremely friendly, extremely polite, and I think we got to get rid of that stereotype of the French and tourists. Most people tend to travel in large cities, whether they're London, New York, Paris, Rome, or whatever. And being large cities, you know, you're going to run into some culture shock. However, especially when you get into the rural areas, and Martinique is primarily rural, although it has two major cities, and you will find people that will go out of their way to, because they are French. They are French, and I have to keep going back to that. This is French territory. They have a great sense of pride. They have a great sense of history and a great sense of heritage. And Roy, food, French food, this is a gastronomic destination. Some of the best French food that I've had anywhere, and by that I mean mainland France. I had dinner one night. It's called La Table de Mamie Nounou. And this woman runs this French restaurant in the Highlands. That's actually just a short walk to the ocean. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. In terms of as a cultural and culinary destination.
And, of course, they're a main producer of rum and of course, export their rums.
Can I talk to you about some rum here? Move over, Margarita.
Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear it. It's interesting you should say that, because some years ago, we held a large airline convention, and it turned out to be in Puerto Rico, who of course is another large producer of rums. And every morning they have rum Bloody Marys, and so it is interesting that you should mention that they have. Well, they don't call it rum margaritas, but basically it's a tie punch is what you call it, right?
Yeah, it's called a tea punch, which tea means punch, okay. A little punch. And it's one part sugarcane syrup, two parts a good, I prefer it, dark Martinique rum, mm-hmm. a lemon slice, and ice. And when you're going sailing, you start out with a tea punch with breakfast.
Well, so wait a minute. You started. You're on a walking tour, and you started out with a tea punch for breakfast.
That's right. It's just it's a very small bit, but it sort of, you know, gets you ready for the day.
I would guess so.
The juices flowing.
Maybe that's why they call it punch.
You got it. You know, tea punch. Petit punch is what it means. And a Creole breakfast. I had a Creole breakfast because I was staying in this marvelous, they call them gîtes. They're kind of like a rural bed and breakfast. Very low cost, very, again, up close and personal type of grassroots destination and hospitality provider. And a Creole breakfast is, you know, the plantain, the bananas, the fruit, the and a tea punch.
Sounds good to me.
Sailing.
You were also there during a sailing race, were you not?
Yes, and it's called Le Tour de Yola. A yola, extremely difficult to explain.
Well, we had yolas, what we called yolas in the Dominican Republic, and basically what they were there. That were these wooden, well, I guess at one time, handmade type boats that the fishermen used to go out. And they were rowboats, and they called them yolas. But then, of course, they advanced to adding, in this particular case, sails to these, I'm assuming.
Yes, And you're absolutely correct. It is a wooden sailing boat, and in August of every year, this is a major sailing race in Martinique. However, it's primarily for the locals. A lot of tourists come, of course, but it is it's one of the biggest events of the year in Martinique. It was absolutely incredible. I swear, no one was on the island. Everyone was out on the water and having a tea punch about every half hour kind of, you know, keeps the wind in your sails, so to speak. But these boats, they are, they're history and heritage in themselves, because throughout all the islands in the West Indies, this is how the fishermen, as you pointed out, would get from island to island, from place
right.
to place. So there's a great commonality in terms of the culture of the West Indies, whether it's, as you well know, Spanish or French. The yol is the Martinique version of the boat. It doesn't have oars, however, and what it's a sailboat.
Right.
And what it does have is these balance beams, these long poles across the boat. And these guys sit out on the ends of the poles to balance the boat. And because the sails are full of wind and you're moving along at an incredible pace. One of the most colorful and one of the most exciting travel experiences I think I've had in a long time.
Now, let me ask you this. You talked about walking tours of Martinique. You also mentioned in the article the wet rainforest, which is another walking tour. Is that correct?
Yeah. There are so many, because the terrain is so diversified, and I mean the island is small, but you have tropical rainforests, you have dry forests, which run along especially the southern part of the island, and do check out the video that I put up there on visiting Martinique on a Segway. But there are also, so you have a rainforest, you have a dry forest, you have mangroves. And you know the importance of mangroves. And mangroves are essentially one of the terrains that is the most sustainable. It's basically a huge filtering system. And I remember the mangrove, for example, just south of you, not far from Sanibel. I forget the exact area, but with the huge mangrove trees, etc. This is also Martinique. So in terms of nature, and in terms of and ecosystems, it's probably one of the islands in that area that is the most interesting and the most scientifically enlightening.
Now, you mentioned that you have put a number of these photos or a slideshow up on your Flickr site. How does one get to that?
Well, you go to my Flickr site. Actually, if you go just to the Philosophical Traveler,
right.
There's a link up there in the top right-hand corner, which will take you immediately to the Flickr site. And for this particular article, you will see images, and some of them, you will see the kind of terrain I'm talking about. Incredibly beautiful and lush and luxuriant because it's on the slopes of a volcano. And so lots of rainfall, and therefore lots of growth. But they're doing, in Martinique, I visited an agricultural station, a scientific agricultural station, extremely interesting because they're working very hard and have succeeded already in developing the whole new micro-industries in terms of what they grow. And this, I think, Martinique is a role model in that respect for many other islands, many other nations that are striving to create their own homegrown industries. And as we know, with climate change and all that sort of thing, we're going back to some of the first principles. And this is what Martinique is doing. And this is what the Creole people are doing. They go right back to the first principles of how do you grow stuff? What do you need? And how do you keep the earth nutrient rich? And these are very old, wise methods of farming.
And what's also interesting, Bob, is that, you know, the sugar industry sort of died off and people were looking for substitute crops in their sugarcane fields. Now it's sort of gone the other direction where there seems to be a shortage of sugar for some reason or other. And a lot of these islands and countries that have produced sugar for a long time are replanting again. I don't know if you saw any indication of that either way while you were in Martinique.
Well, sugar, of course, and sugar cane is directly related to the rum industry as well. And Martinique is, its rum industry is very diversified in itself. And I should mention, too, that there's some wonderful heritage sites, one place called Habitation Clément, and you'll see that mentioned in the article. This is a former sugar plantation, now a rum distillery. It's a beautiful heritage property and an art gallery. And so the economy of Martinique is very strong, but it's an economy that, like agriculture, is interconnected and interdependent. So, for example, arts and crafts are very supported, and they are also, in terms of culinary tourism, they're using local products, local grown, and this, of course, is very French as well. The French people love the art of food. This is also Martinique.
And we always talk about this at food time, which is...
I know.
It gets me crazy. Let's talk about some... we can cover some of the resources for people to go to do a little research on Martinique. First of all, you did mention the Habitation Clément. Is that the way you pronounce it?
Right. And if you go to this article, which is up there, first of all, be sure to take a virtual walk through the Creole Gardens. The official website of Martinique is up there as well. There are three articles that I found extremely important, and one is called Organic Agriculture in Martinique. So this whole organic food business, Martinique is very much into that. Another article which I linked to is called What Lies Beneath, Cultural Excavation in Neocolonial Martinique. And this is an article which is extremely interesting because it really explains the history and heritage of the Creole culture in Martinique. The third one that I highly recommend that people have a look at is called Space and Identity in Martinique, Towards a New Reading of the Spatial History of the Peasantry. And what this article does is it explains why people of African descent who were brought as slaves to the West Indies, the Caribbean, eventually emerged as a culture unto themselves and developed a sense of self-determination and a sense of how to survive both physically but also culturally. And they retained their local languages. And the Creole French in Mufsnik is, for any linguist, is extremely interesting to learn and to hear.
Bob, I thank you for sharing all this.
My guest has been Mr. Bob Fisher from Philosophical Traveler. And Bob, thank you very much for joining us on Talking Travel.
Do you suffer from chronic pain, severe arthritis, joint pain, or fibromyalgia? Living every day in pain can make you depressed, fatigued, and moody. You can even be losing sleep. Well, I can help you stop the pain today with a free sample of Pain Free. Pain Free is a revolutionary new safe and effective cream that uses the natural power of glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate. Simply rub Pain Free on the skin and your body will naturally melt away the pain fast. Get your free supply of Pain Free now and see if Pain Free is right for you. Only pay shipping and handling.
Just call Pain Free toll free at 1-877-283-3445. That's 1-877-283-3445.
Pain-Free is trusted by professional athletes for quick pain relief. So free yourself from depression, fatigue, and chronic pain for only the cost of shipping and handling.
Just call Pain-Free toll-free at 1-877-283-3445. That's 1-877-283-3445.
One time or another, all of us might need a rehabilitation and nursing center, maybe from an accident or an illness. So where should you go? The answer is simple, Springwood, located at 4602 Northgate Court, right here in Sarasota. Whether you need long-term or short-term care, or post-acute care, or even hospice, the caregivers at Springwood will be there for you. Why not stop by and take a personal tour? Just call 941-355-2913 or visit their website, springwoodrnc.com. Springwood, the best-kept secret in Sarasota.
This is Roy Lowy, and you're listening to Talking Travel on WTMY 1280 Sarasota and TTRN.com. The show also airs from WTMY.com, streams live, so you can listen to it at home as well. My guest today is Mika Adler, and he's the CEO and founder of Fluent Mobile. Welcome to Talking Travel.
Thanks, Roy. It's great to be here.
Interesting concept. It's made a lot of press lately and exciting. How about walking our audience through it and give them some idea on just how Fluent News works?
Well, Fluent News is actually the first application for the iPhone and the iPod Touch to aggregate exclusively made-for-mobile content from most trusted news sources across the web into a single, easy-to-read and up-to-the-minute mobile newspaper. So what we're doing is taking news from a number of different sources, top news sources across the web, such as the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and CNN, and a number of others.
But you're being selective, so people aren't flooded with just a whole bunch of news. You're actually selecting what you believe should be heard at this particular time. Is that it?
That's exactly right. Yeah, we've developed some pretty interesting algorithmic techniques that do this automatically and really pick the most relevant current news that our readers will be interested in.
And you've just mentioned the Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and CNN, to mention a few.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, we have currently about 32 news sources that we're aggregating, and we're adding more sources continuously to that.
Okay, and there's keyword searches. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have a number of pretty interesting features. One of them is that you can do keyword searches. So you can type in a search. Let's say you're going on a trip to California and you want to find out what's going on in California. So you can type in California, and it'll give you the latest news stories on what's happening from these top sources.
Right. Well, it's interesting to be selective because I read an awful lot of industry news, and it probably takes the first hour and a half of my day every morning just to go search through them. And then, of course, when you get to a particular topic, it takes you to five other places if you want to go there. So if you're obviously on the road and using a phone, you want to be able to limit that, and it looks like you've come up with a solution to it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, Fluent News is really, really optimized for the phone, which obviously is very useful for when you travel. All of the articles also that we have in the index are optimized for the phone, so they look very good on your mobile device.
Right, and obviously easy to get to, because if people are driving, we want to be a bit careful with all of that, because we know that that could be a dangerous situation.
Yeah, it's very easy to use. Very, very much designed so you don't have to do any. So on the iPhone, some news sources require pinching and reformatting of the screen and things like that. We don't do any of that. It's really, really designed for what we call one-handed browsing.
You are going to have constant updates, so they'll always have the latest news.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, so whatever the latest news is gets pushed out to the phone, and you'll see what's there at any time.
All right, now how does one subscribe, or how does one get this information?
How does one get the application?
Yes.
We're available for free in the iPhone App Store that you can access either from your desktop or directly from the phone, and it's a free download, so you can download Fluent News for free. One other feature, actually, that I do want to mention also, which I think is very relevant for a travel audience, is that that we have offline access to the news. So that means that if your phone is not connected to an internet connection, you have all of the most latest version of the news available on the phone. So let's say you're on an airplane that doesn't have connectivity, or on a boat somewhere, or for whatever reason don't have connectivity to any sort of a network. Everything's there available on your phone. The latest sync is there and easy to read.
Well, kind of walk us through that process, because that's interesting, is in terms of thinking about getting news, the first thing one does think about is connecting to the internet. So you're now telling us that isn't necessary. So how does that work?
Well, you won't have anything that you haven't connected to the network. So the way that it works is that when you launch the app, you might have time to read an article or two articles, and then let's say that you're sitting in the waiting room for your airplane, and you have time to read an article or two articles, and then you board the airplane. The rest of the articles that are current at that time will load onto your phone. Now, you won't get updates while you're on the airplane, not connected to the network, but at least everything that was current right before you got on the plane will be on the phone.
All right. So what you're saying is that basically the information is free, other than obviously the minutes one uses on phone, and phones that most people have unlimited these days. You can receive it without going online. How do you initially get access to this? Because you mentioned in an article that I've just read, it mentions it going to iTunes. The application is available through Apple's store, on the iPhone or on their iTunes website.
Yeah. So what our users would do is go to through iTunes or through the App Store on the iPhone. They'll go to the App Store and download the application onto their phone. And again, it is a free, Fluent News is a free application, so you don't have to pay for it. Then the application is on the phone, and whenever you launch the application, it downloads the most current set of news. And if you leave the application running, it'll update and always have the most recent version. And then if you do get into a scenario where you're not connected to the network, you're able to read the most recent version that you downloaded onto the phone.
All right, so the application is free. There are no upgrades to other applications?
No. We are doing upgrades to the phone. So, for instance, not upgrades to the phone, upgrades to our application. So, for example, we have a new feature coming out very soon that we're excited about allows us to save articles that we searched on, things like that. So the we are continuously improving the application. We have those kinds of updates, but you don't need to update anything else on your phone.
Right, and it's all visual. There is no audio.
That's right. Yeah, it's all visual.
The question that always comes to my mind is, how do you guys make money with this? Advertising? I mean, everybody offers all this free stuff, and it's very valuable information, and it's very convenient for the consumer, but I often wonder, How about the back office? What's the bottom line here?
Yeah, good question. We have we do have some ads that we display intermixed with our index. Uh-huh. We try to be as subtle with them as possible. You know, we're not trying to be too in your face, but we do get some revenue off of the advertising that we have.
Right. Okay. I mean, that's what we all try to do, but we're not always successful at that. But when one has something as clever as this, I would certainly think that the advertisers will be a little easier to reach. Is there anything specific that you'd like to cover before we wind it up? I think that there are a lot of listeners out there that may not be as knowledgeable about applications like this, and maybe you can just give us a just easy run through on how they get it and how they continue to get it, so they'll have a better understanding.
Yeah, so Fluent News is available from the App Store, which you can access either through iTunes or directly from your iPhone or your iPod Touch.
Right.
Once you download it onto your phone, once you go through the App Store process and get it onto your phone, it's always there. There's nothing to set up, nothing to configure. Very easy to use. And one other feature I'll mention very quickly before we run out of time is that we've put a lot of effort into sorting the news as well, making it very easy to see specific topics. So, for instance, if there's a lot of stories on one topic, we group all of those together so you can read all of them at once, and also you get sort of a nice overview of all the different topics that are being covered. Probably a little hard to explain over a radio interview, but the best way to do it is to download Fluent News and try it yourself.
Right, and they can either do this by going to your website or to iTunes?
Yep.
Okay, and would you give us your website, please?
Yep, absolutely. It's fluentmobile.com, and you can also go to our Twitter handle and follow. We have a stream of breaking news stories there, which you can subscribe to. I'm all optimized for mobile, and our Twitter handle is Fluent News, FluentNews.
Right, and also through Facebook, and
we have a Facebook fan page as well. We're Fluent News there as well, and then the URL at iTunes is www.itunes.com/app/Fluent News.
Right, so, and of course email.
And of course email. Yep. You can reach us at info@fluentnews.com.
Okay. Well, my guest has been Mika Adler, who is the CEO and founder of Fluent Mobile. I thank you very much for joining us and sharing all this with our audience. And as things progress, maybe we can chat a little bit more about it at another time.
That sounds great.
Thanks
for having
very much.
Me on the show.
It's a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is now Hall of Famer Wade Boggs, and I'd like to talk to you about another exclusive group that I belong to that has changed my life. I'm talking about the thousands of guys who, just like me, have decided to take control of their hair loss and regrow their hair permanently with the pros at Medical Hair Restoration. The best thing about this club is that you see the rewards every day. Having my hair back has made me look and feel younger than I have in years. And that's the ultimate vote of confidence.
If you are balding or thinning, Medical Hair Restoration, the nation's leader in microsurgical hair transplantation, wants to send you a free DVD package explaining just how easy and painless their hair replacement procedure is. Call 800-410-3147. That's 800-410-3147. Take control of your hair loss and get this free information package sent to you with tons of before and after pictures and testimonials. There's no cost or obligation, so call now. 800-410-3147.
My guest is Jaime Enrique Simone. He's with a communications company that represents SATA Airlines, which is called Azor Express Airline. We're going to chat a little bit about that in Portugal. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
I kind of slipped a little bit on your last name there, but I...
Portuguese is not an easy language.
You know, I speak some Spanish, but the problem is that Portuguese is a very guttural language.
It is. People often think it sounds like some sort of Slavic language.
Right, and it's interesting because when I the last time I was in Lisbon and I talked to a taxi cab driver, you know, I was speaking to him in Spanish. I might have been better off speaking to him in English, but because you think the numbers are going to be pretty much the same, but they're not. And
But, you know, taxi cab drivers are taxi cab drivers. He probably speaks 10 languages, so.
And, you know, Portuguese and Spanish have a common root, which is Latin.
Right.
Like, you know, French or Italian, they're all derived as what they call corruptions of Latin. So there's a common use of verbs and conjugations.
Before we get to the airline, while in Lisbon, I was really impressed by their subway system.
It's a good subway system, and it's pretty recent. They started building it in the late 60s, but they spent a lot of money in the last 10 years expanding it.
And they're like shopping plazas.
Some of the new subway stations, they kind of make them intermodal centers. So you've got a train station, a subway station, a bus station, and then at the Vasco da Gama shopping mall with all different types of stores and grocery outlets and hotels.
Once you get used to it, it's really convenient, and it gets you to where you need to get. And I felt very comfortable. As I said, the stations were clean. They had, you know, they had good shops, and I was very, very impressed, and used it quite extensively while I was there. And would suggest to those
history of the city and tunneling under a 3,000 to 4,000-year-old city, they found lots of Roman ruins. So often the subway system was slowed down by archaeological digs.
Interesting. But that, not surprising, because it happens in many parts of the world where they build a new apartment building complex and they do find an archaeological site, which is interesting. You wonder why they hadn't found it before, but I guess nobody decided to dig in that spot.
If you dig, you don't know it's there. There's actually been several cases in Portugal where things were found and people didn't know they were there until kind of a mistake happened, and a Roman city was unearthed by accident.
Right. Let's get on to Azores Express. They've started a new service, I understand, into Boston. Is that correct?
Well, they've been flying to Boston now for actually about 20 years. They started with charters, and then about a decade ago, they took over with their own aircraft.
Right.
But they're significantly expanding their footprint in Boston, especially this summer, where you're going to have almost daily service. Actually, you're going to have daily service to Portugal, and the two points of arrival from Boston will be the Azores and Lisbon.
Right.
So pretty much you can catch an Azores Express flight any day of the week from June till October to Portugal, and then they're planning for next fall to have three flights a week in the fall, winter, and spring to the Azores with service onto Lisbon. But this summer we're going to offer three direct flights a week to Lisbon. So in just 5 hours you can be in Lisbon, which is a nice service.
And they're actually based in Lisbon, aren't they?
Well, they have significant offices and airplane maintenance facilities in Lisbon, but the head office is in Ponta Delgada on the island of São Miguel in the Azores. The SATA, doing business in the U.S. is Azores Express, is the Azores flag carrier and Portugal's second largest airline. And the Azores are an autonomous region of Portugal, which means they are kind of the way Florida is to the United States. You know, you're part of the U.S., but you have your own system of government. The same thing exists in the Azores. They have a local president, a local assembly. They're one of two autonomous regions that Portugal has. One is the Azores, which are about, say, 2,000 miles off the east coast of the United States, in the middle of the Atlantic, and then Madeira, which is about 300 miles off of the coast of Morocco, or 750 miles south of Lisbon.
And Lisbon, of course, does have a very, very, very good maintenance facilities because of TAP, Portuguese.
TAP and SATA are partners, actually, and they co-chair on a lot of flights. So if you're flying from Lisbon to Madeira, you can either take a SATA jet or a TAP jet. Both airlines work together.
I've actually explored the TAP's maintenance facility, and
really?
Very, very impressive. Yeah. Well, because
like
TAP
flies all Airbus jets, so they share a lot of.
Thing is that they also used to fly the TriStars, the L-1011s.
Yes, they did for many years.
And they still have the tooling. They still have the maintenance facility there. It's really quite interesting, and because they outsource a lot of that, like a lot of the approved maintenance facilities do, and they are probably one of the biggest specialists in the Airbuses because they Airbuses now, but in the TriStars because they flew them for so many years.
They did fly them up until I think the mid or late 80s. They were flying L-1011s to New York.
Yeah, and they
now they're into the bigger Airbus.
Yeah, of course they are now and newer
series.
Now, the islands. I was a little bit surprised at how many little islands there actually are. Can we kind of go there for a bit?
Yeah, you know, there are nine islands in the Azores, and people often say, well, why is it that in the middle of the Atlantic, far from everything are there these nine islands? And there's a very simple answer. It's tectonic plates. You've got a plate for North America and a plate for Europe, and the two plates are pulling apart. So over the last 3 million years, you had, not all at the same time, but over different periods, massive amounts of volcanic activity caused by the tectonic plates moving. And those undersea volcanoes became islands. So the islands tend to go from oldest to newest as you go east to west. And they're spread into three very distinct groups, spread about 400 nautical miles apart in the ocean. So in the eastern group, closest to Portugal, about 1,000 miles off the Portuguese coast, you have the biggest island, São Miguel, where half the population of the Azores lives, about 100,000 people, and then the small island of Santa Maria to the south. And then you've got the central group, which is the most diverse, five different islands, all of them different, and they range from Pico, which is Portugal's highest point, 7,700 feet above sea level the island rises to. It's an amazing dormant volcano. And then four other islands, and then finally the western group, which is two very, very sweet islands, the island of Flores, which is known for having 30 waterfalls cascading off of its western coast, and the tiny island of Corvo, which has just 300 people living on it. It's kind of a teardrop-shaped island.
Right. Now, I'm assuming there's air transportation between these islands.
There is. It's probably the best way to get around is by air, except with one exception. If you go from the island of Pico in the central group to the island of Faial, it's a six-mile trip.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
25 minutes by ferry. And you can also go from Pico and Faial to the nearby island of São Jorge, which is about a 45-minute ferry boat. Everything else, you're talking about hours. And while there is a cruise ship in the summer that goes from island to island, most of the inter-island transportation is on cargo ships with passenger areas, and it takes you 3 to 4 hours to get from one island to another, while flying tends to be any time from half an hour to an hour and 20 minutes, depending on where you're going. So it's much quicker.
I
would say because the islands in the Azores, actually, most of them are quite big.
I can see that. I'm looking at a map here at the moment, and I was quite surprised at the size of some of them. So there would be an inter-island air service with light.
Yes, SATA Air Azores has a fleet of five turboprops that service all of the islands.
So I think nowadays, you know, if you're going to travel, you need to kind of have a justification. Why would you go overseas to see something you could see in the U.S.? Well, the Azores are like any other place in the world. You know, they've got trees from China. They've got a landscape that isn't unlike Iceland mixed with Northern California. The architecture is Portuguese. The dialect is unique. The food is unlike any place else in the world because of the unique ingredients available there. You know you're someplace special. And the people are very, very welcoming. And the great thing is many of them speak English very well because, you know, they have a cousin in Toronto or they have a cousin in Providence or they live there themselves. It's amazing. I've never been a place that's been so far from every place else. And yet, as an American, not only are they glad to see you, but they're, you know, they've got friends and family where you're coming from. And there's also 2,000 American servicemen serving on the NATO air base on the island of Terceira, so there's already a presence of Americans there as well.
Great. That's really great coverage on that. I wouldn't have thought, nor would our listening audience realize, that there is so much history and that it's so connected to North America as well. John, I really appreciate the time you've taken. How about a contact number for Azor Express Airlines and maybe a website?
Well, the best website to go to is www.sata.pt. They do business as Azores Express. And 800 number is 1-800-762-9995. 762-9995.
Jeff, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for your time. And
nice to chat with you, too. Thank you.
I look forward to talking to you again.
Take care. Be well.
All right. Bye for now.
And for all you savvy travelers out there listening, you may want to tune in on Sundays for WTMY's all-new Sunday Travel Radio. From 5 to 6, yours truly, Roy Lowy, will host Talking Travel. From travel journalists reporting from around the world, what's hot, what's not, single travel, single parents with kids, the best online travel sites. Our consumer advocates will even be on the job to resolve issues that you may have, and we'll cover it right here on WTMY. So if you want the latest travel info, we'll be here on Sundays and hope you will join us right here on WTMY 1280. You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy. and I'm your travel guy.